For a message this morning, I've chosen to look at an Old Testament Bible story, actually an entire book of the Old Testament, and it's a story that always has impressed me, and I think most of us know this story from little on up, and it's probably something that, it's probably impressed many of you too, and that is the book of Esther. And you can turn to the book of Esther. I titled the message here this morning, book is just how God is working through it, and God is orchestrating all the different things that come to play. The timing in it is just amazing, how God is working here to save the Jews. We don't know just a lot about the book. We do not know who wrote it. It does appear that the writer probably was a Jew. Because of how his emphasis on the origin of a Jewish festival, which is in the end of the book, and from the Jewish nationalism that permeates the story is why they think it's probably a Jew. The setting is in Persia, and there was Jews throughout the country at the time. But the interesting thing about this story in this book of the Bible is that it is completely absent from any reference to God, worship, prayer, or sacrifice. Now, yet the whole time we see God working behind the scenes. It does appear that the author may have deliberately refrained from mentioning God or other religious activity as a literary device to heighten the fact that it is God who controls and directs all the seemingly insignificant coincidence that make up the plot and issue in deliverance for the Jews. And so you can kind of look at it as a piece of literature or a story where God is not mentioned, but yet God is so woven through the whole thing. Ceremony or something religious is they're fasting, and we'll take a notice of that. There's two different times that they fasted, but there was never sacrifice or prayer or worship mentioned in this story. I would really like to, it's just hard to know what to leave out as far as reading it from the Bible. I'm not going to read every chapter, but I'm going to read a good bit of it as we go throughout the book. I'm going to pick my way through, and we'll look at it a little more chapter by chapter. Most of us know there was the king Ahasuerus, and he was reigning, and he was together with his those who counseled him, and seven of his men there, and he had asked for the king Vashti to be brought forth, and she refuses to come out to him, or to come before the men, and we know how Vashti then falls from grace, and she no longer is queen, and she refuses to listen to the king. Did she feel she was doing something wrong by presenting herself before this group of drunken men? Or was it strictly disobedience and not obeying her husband? And that is a question that I don't know that we know exactly. But however it was, the king's advisors felt that she was in the wrong. She was disobedient, and therefore that cost her her queenship. She no longer was the queen there because of that. Which leads us up to chapter 2 on Esther and choosing Esther as a queen. I'm going to start reading in chapter 2. And after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. Then said the king's servant, so that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of the kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the women, unto the custody of Haggai the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given them. And let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of, and let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. Now in Shushan the palace, where was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jer, the son of Shimi, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity which had been carried away with Jehoiada, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan the palace to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also unto the king's court and the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women. And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him, and he speedily gave her things for purification with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens which were meet to be given her, and out of the king's house and her prep, and he preferred her and her maidens unto the best place of the house of the women. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. Now when every maiden's turn was come to go into King Ahasuerus, after that she had been 12 months according to the manner of the women, for so were the days of their purification accomplished, to wit, 6 months with oil of myrrh, 6 months with sweet odors, and other things for the purification of the women. Then thus came every maiden to the king, wheresoever she desired was given her to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. In the evening she went, and on the morrow she returned into the second house of the women, and the custody of Shushgaz, the king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She come in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, and that she were called by name. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abaliah, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for her daughter, was come to go into the king, she required nothing but that Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his house royal in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the Lord and the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast unto all the princes and his servants. Even Esther's feast he made a release to the providences, and gave gifts according to the state of the king. And when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people, as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teres, of those which kept the door, were wroth, and sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out, therefore they were both hanged in a tree. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. The point I want to pull out here and start with Esther is how Esther respected her cousin Mordecai. We see that Esther did exactly what she was told. Now, this was not either one of her parents, because they had both died, but she still respected him. She was as a daughter to him. And many of the young maidens were gathered together to be presented to the king, and Esther was among them. She may have probably had very little choice, actually, in this matter. She was just summoned to be brought together. There was people sent out to bring beautiful maidens together to the palace, and Esther probably had very little choice in that, and she was taken in with the others. Now, I want you to think, too, that and remember that she was a Jew living in Persia, and Mordecai, twice, he told her not to reveal her Jewish identity, and she listened. Again, she respected him. And just think how she could have become high-minded and not respected her cousin. After all, she had the potential of becoming a queen, but still she listened to her cousin. If we go down in the chapter a little farther, we see that in verse 15, Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked after her. And then in verse 17, the king loved Esther above all the women. Now, do you think she was loved just because of her external beauty? I tend to think not. I tend to think that there was something about Esther, something inside Esther that was shining out that the others just could see. There was more beauty, and it was not just external beauty, but there's also a sense of inner beauty. My challenge to each one of us here this morning is that, and can I say maybe sisters especially, that to remember that there's more than just what's on the outside. We need to have beauty on the inside and let it shine out. As we go through the chapter later on there, meanwhile, Mordecai was busy. He was sitting in the king's gate. And this was a fairly prominent spot. The gate was used for commercial and a legal center, and the market was held there. The court also sat there to judge and to transact business. And here Mordecai somehow discovered these two men that were upset with the king and wished to kill King Ahasuerus. And as we know the story, he then told Esther, and then she passed it on to the king, and they checked into it and found out that these men were guilty. These men were executed and recorded in a book of facts, or chronicles, it says, about the important events. And we start to see how this, we know the whole story, but we see each step of the way here how God was behind the scene and God was bringing this all together. I want to pick up reading here in chapter 3. And after these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's house bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. In the first month, this is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast pur, that is, the lot, before Haman from day to day and from month to month to the 12th month, that is, the month Adar. And Haman said unto the king Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all the people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hand of those that have the charge of the business, to bring it unto the king's treasures. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agite, the Jew's enemy. And the king said unto Haman, the silver is given to thee, and the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee. Then were the king's scribes called on the 30th day of the first month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants and the governors that were over every province, to the rulers of every people of every province, according to the writing thereof, to every people after their language. In the name of the king Ahasuerus was it written and sealed with the king's ring. And the letters were sent by post unto all the king's provinces, to destroy, to kill, to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 30th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. The copy of the writing is for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all the people, that they should be ready against that day. The post went out, being hastened by the king's commandment, and the decrees was given in Shushan the palace. And the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city Shushan was perplexed. So here we see how Haman is plotting to kill, or plotting against the Jews. And some time has transpired. It's been about 4 years. Bible scholars believe it was about 4 years from when Esther was queen until this point here. The king had named this man Haman authority over all of the princes. But there was a problem. Haman had a problem, and that was that Mordecai refused to bow to Haman. And why this was, I'm not exactly sure why Mordecai refused to bow, because the Jews were allowed to bow to kings and people over them. It was not against their religious beliefs to bow to those in authority. It seems more so, as I studied into it a little bit, that it seems that Mordecai refused to bow to Haman. And the reason for Haman's hatred of the Jews was because of a long-standing enmity between the Jews and the Amaleks. It was two different groups of people here, and it seemed like the hatred went back more than just this generation. But as we see here, what happens when somebody like Haman, when somebody who is angry, where anger takes a person. Haman's desire to kill a whole group of people scattered across all the provinces just because of one man who would not bow to him. He had promised one person in the palace that would not bow. And so out of wrath and out of anger, he decided to wipe out this whole group of people all across the country. Anger will take us places and make us do things we never dreamed we would do. Haman didn't start out probably in that way. You know, it was brought to his attention that somebody wasn't bowing to him, and therefore he reacted. We don't know history before that of who Haman was, but we just see as it progresses throughout the story of Esther here how his anger got him in trouble, his pride got him in trouble time and again. So as this decree goes out, we come into chapter 4 and we see Mordecai asking for Esther's help. And I know it gets fairly long, but yet it seems to leave out any certain chapter to skip over it here in the middle is they're all of very much importance. So we'll start chapter 4. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud voice and a bitter cry, and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maidens and her chamberlains came and told it to her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he received it not. Then called Esther for Hatach, one of the king's chamberlains, which he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So Hatach went forth to Mordecai unto the street of the city, which was before the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasures for the Jews to destroy them. Also, he gave them the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go into the king and to make supplication unto him and to make request before him to her people. And Hatach came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again Esther spake unto Hatach and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. And all the king's servants and all the people of the king's province do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come in unto the king in the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape the king's house, nor them all the more than all the Jews. For if thou alone holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer, "Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, nor night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. So by now we see here in the beginning of the chapter that word had reached Mordecai. And he now understands what is happening and why it is happening, all because of him. So he rents his clothes, as we see there, puts on sackcloth and ashes. Meanwhile, it says here that all the Jews across the province are doing the same as they find out the decree. And just think, a whole group of people are about to be killed. This is something that I know is foreign to us, and we can't even fathom that if across the United States a whole group of people would be summoned to die. It's something that we just can hardly wrap our mind around, but this is the circumstances that they now find themselves in. So Mordecai here had the sackcloth on, and it says he came before the king's gate in sackcloth. Now it also says that you are not allowed to come into the king's gate in sackcloth. It says you're not allowed to come before the presence of the king's gate mourning. So Mordecai was, I guess, on the outside. And somebody noticed and sent word to Esther that Mordecai was out there in sackcloth and ashes. And it seems like maybe he was trying to somehow reach Esther in his sadness and his grief. I don't know if he was at that place just to be noticed, but it could appear that he was, trying to reach Esther because he needed her. And so Esther sends a messenger and says, "What's wrong?" and sends out clothes, new clothes or other clothes for him to put on so that he could come in. But he refuses. He would not put them on. Instead of that, Esther gives this copy of the decree and told her to go into the king and make supplication, or to go into the king and beg and plead, humbly beg for something, or to take away this decree. Of course, we know the well-known story that Esther sends back a message that she cannot do this. How can she go in unto the king when it's a command that anybody who enters into the king's presence without being summoned will surely die? They will be put to death unless the king holds out his golden scepter. But then we see that Mordecai reminds her that if she holds her peace, more than likely she will die as well. Isn't it wonderful that we can come before our king and our Lord at any time and not have to worry about whether or not we will live? The Lord is always holding out his golden scepter to us. we're welcome in his presence whenever. Mordecai said, "And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And even though God is not mentioned in the book of Esther, we see that Mordecai believed in God, or he believed that God was orchestrating this whole picture, this whole story, and had hit, and the, all these events and everything that happened, the timing had a purpose. And we can look back across the story today and see that, but we need to remember of where Esther was. She was in the middle of it. She was unable to see what benefit this could be. Even being crowned queen, she probably didn't know what it all was going to mean. And that's a point I want to try to convey to each of us here this morning, is we do not always know why God has led us where he has, or why he is leading us now. But let us too never forget that we cannot see or know everything that God does. We cannot see the whole picture, the whole story. Yes, she became a queen, which was astonishing. But did you ever think that maybe Esther, this Jewish girl, had no desire to be queen? She was not born into royalty. She didn't know what there was to know about palace life. As I studied into it more, I kind of feel that she may have almost... We do not know, but maybe she felt out of place there. And she's like, why? And then Mordecai says, you may have been called for such a time as this. Because we know that God placed her there to save her people. And today God is placing you where you are for reasons you may not know. And are you allowing God to direct and lead and place you where he wants you? And it... God may lead us, and oftentimes he does lead us, to places that are outside our comfort zone. But God is using us above and beyond our own imagination. In verse 16, we see a second time where the people are fasting. Esther is calling for a fast on her behalf. Again, God is not mentioned, but we see that all the Jews are in Shushan fast with her. And it shows that she realized it was serious things at hand. And she was crying out to God to help carry her through. Going into chapter 5, now come to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said the king unto her, "What wilt thou, King Queen Esther? And what is thy request? It shall be given thee to the half of the kingdom." And Esther answered, "If it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him." Then the king said, "Cause Haman to make haste, that he may do as Esther hath said." So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, "What is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? Even to the half of the kingdom, it shall be performed." Then answered Esther and said, "My petition and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for him, and I will do tomorrow as the king hath said." Then went Haman forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's house, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself, and when he come home, he sent and called his friends and Zeresh his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and of the multitude of his children and of all things within the king, wherein the king had promised him, and how he had advanced him above the princes and the servants of the king. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther, the queen, did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself. And tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. Yet all that availeth me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting in the king's gate. Then said Zareth his wife and all his friends unto him, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou and marry with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. So after 3 days of fasting and praying, Esther puts on her royal clothes and goes into the king. And we see that she prepares. There's preparation in order to do this. We too must prepare and plan ahead if we want God's blessing on our lives. The story could have been totally different if she had gone in sackcloth or had not made preparation. We see that a little bit later then, she even had this banquet prepared ahead of her going in. She knew what her plan was. She was going in to invite him to a banquet. There was preparation. We know this, the big moment was for Esther as she went in unto the king, not being called, not knowing what his response would be. But she found favor in his sight, and he extended his golden scepter, and she was able to live. That was the only way she was able to live, is if he extended mercy or extended his scepter to her. In moments like these, we need to have a trust in God that is something bigger than just us. We need to be trusting in somebody that is trusting God, and he is bigger than we are. We need to just rest in the knowledge that God is in control. As we look at Esther, we think, what did she have to lose? She was condemned to die anyway. So what did she have to lose by going into the king? And the same is for us today. What do we have to lose here on this earth? And sometimes I wonder why I hold my life so dear to me, or why we hold our life so dear to us. Because we need to have that vision. We need to remember that death will only take us closer to where we should be longing to go, and that is heaven. It should be, so what have we to lose? Even to death, what is there to lose? Lose living here on this earth, but we have heaven to gain. A quote I came across is, anticipating heaven doesn't eliminate pain, but it lessens it and puts it into perspective. I thought that was very good, very fitting, that it's not going to take away from the sorrow and the pain here on this earth, but it helps us keep it in perspective and why we're here. Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of water. He turneth it whithersoever he will. Again, it's talking of God's hand working in, especially in the life of the king here, King Ahasuerus, allowing Esther to live, listening to her request. But it says, even the heart of the king is in the Lord's hand. It seems that for some reason Esther was unable to ask a request right there, but she requested a banquet, and she invited Haman and the king to this banquet, and they made haste and went to it. And then, as we know, the story goes on that she again invited them to another one. But in the meantime, as the story plays out, in the meantime, Satan was still working in the heart of Haman. He left the presence of the king with great joy. He was invited to a banquet again with only the king and the queen. He must be very important. The queen must like him. And we see he was so proud that he goes home and invites his wife and his friends over and tells them everything. He tells them about his glory, his riches, his family, and how the king had promoted him. He's very self-centered, focused on oneself. And did you ever notice how a proud person tends to talk about oneself a lot? Pride is a sin, but it's also very disgusting to others around them when one brags on oneself all the time. Most people don't enjoy being around someone whose world completely revolves around oneself. We see that here. Haman thought the world basically revolved around him. But Haman still had this problem and this hatred for Mordecai. And he says there in one of the verses, he says, "Yet this availeth me nothing so long I see Mordecai." He had all this thing. He had riches, he had power, he had family. But yet because this one man refused to bow to him, he said, what does that all avail me except this one person doesn't bow to me? We see how short-sighted he was and where his hatred and anger is taking him. Mordecai had not done anything to Haman. It was Haman's own hatred and pride that was spoiling his own life. His friend suggested how to take care of this problem. We see here at the end of chapter 5. Build a gallows. Build it high. Make a statement. Take your revenge out on Haman. Show him how you feel. Take care of this man that is causing you problems. And I think this also shows a little bit or reveals a little bit of who Haman's friends were. At least they were definitely not people who encouraged him to do the right thing. They fed on his anger and his hatred. And one question I thought about at about this point here, and Mordecai had told Esther to conceal that she was a Jew, and apparently it was not known to Haman. We see later on in the story that it was not known to the king until that until a later point, but apparently was not known to Haman either, the relationship between Mordecai and Esther. Because you think if Haman would have known that he was, his hatred was towards the cousin of the queen, it may have made him think twice about what he was doing. We go into chapter 6 there, and we know how Haman comes in the morning to ask the night before that the king was not able to sleep. They brought in the chronicles of the law, of the chronicles there, and they read it to him, and they found out that Mordecai had saved the king in earlier days, and he has asked what has been done, and they said nothing. In the morning, Haman comes in to ask his request, and again, his pride got in the way, thinking he was the one that the king would want to honor. And again, we see the Lord's hand at work, that the king was not able to sleep that night. And this did not just happen by chance. I believe that the Lord was definitely in the midst of this, the thing of the king not being able to sleep. And he can do the same today. And his ability to control events around us should bring a sense of fear and awe to us. Maybe it, or God could make you stay awake tonight for a purpose. He has that ability to do so. So the story continues about Haman's pride getting in his way, because he thought the world revolved around him, and who would the king want to honor more than him? And so he does this very lavish way of honoring somebody. And the king says, go do that to Mordecai. And instead of asking his request of hanging Mordecai on the gallows, he now has to honor the man. After doing this, which was a very humbling experience for Haman, he returns home to his wife and friends. And for some reason at this point, it seems like his wife and friends were now these miserable comforters, or they have somewhat changed their outlook, and I'm not sure exactly what changed it there. But they kind of are these miserable comforters. They did not advise him to repent and ask Mordecai's pardon from this bad design against him. But they foretold his destiny as fatal and unavoidable. It says there in verse 13, and Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zereth his wife unto him, If Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him. They predicted his fall. They said, if you have begun to fall before this Jew, Mordecai, Haman, you will not prevail against him. But he didn't have much time to think of that. In verse 14, we see that he was again escorted off to the next banquet. And I would love to continue reading each of these chapters, but for sake of time, we know how he was again brought to the banquet. Esther then asked her request. This time Esther speaks up for her people. She begs for her life and for the life of her people. And King Ahasuerus is shocked. Who is it that would do such a thing to one in royalty, especially the queen? And she says, this man Haman that is right here with us, he is the man who is doing this. And then this very proud, powerful, haughty man becomes a very scared coward. He falls on his on the bed there, or at the feet of Esther, begging for his life. But Haman sees by the look on the king's face that he is not getting any mercy. And at the very same time, Harbona, I think you, there's a lot of names here that are very hard to pronounce, but comes in and tells the king about the gallows that Haman has built to hang Mordecai, a man who has just been honored by the king. The king had just honored this man, and Haman wants to hang him, or was preparing to hang him. Harbona had been sent earlier to bring in Vashti, and thus set in motion the events of that would lead to her fall and the choice of Esther as queen, and now he's also instrumental in the fall of Haman and the rise of Mordecai. They drag Haman out, and as we know the story, they hang him on his own gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. But again, the decree had been sent out in earlier days, and so it could not be reversed. And so the life of Esther's people was still not spared. And we see also at the beginning of chapter 8 that the king gave the house of Haman to Esther and all the possessions that were there with it. And there's a proverb that says these things will happen. That proverb is Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. Again, it shows that the just will receive the wealth of the sinner. Again, we see that she's begging for the life of her people. The king tells her to do as she wants and sign his name, write out a decree however that she wants, and to sign his name, send it out to all the providences. So the news went out that the Jews were to gather together and to stand for their life against anyone who would try to attack them. And so the fear of the Jews fell on the people, and the dread of Mordecai fell upon the rulers of the providences. For Mordecai was a great in the king's house and waxed greater and greater. So most of the people feared the Jews at that point and refused to fight against them. But the Jews still did have some enemies. And we see different ones in Shushan the palace. There was over 500 who fell by the sword. And then including 10 sons of Haman, which were hanged upon gallows as well. But I just want to take a quick glimpse at chapter 10 there. The last chapter, it also says, I'll just read these three verses. And the king Ahasuerus laid a tribute upon the land and upon the islands of the sea, and all the acts of his power and of his might, and the declaration of the greatness of Mordecai, wherewith the king advanced him, or they not written in the book of the chronicles of the kings of Medes and Persians. For Mordecai the Jew was next unto King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people and speaking peace to all his seed. Again, Bible scholars believe that the story does not exactly stop here, as it says the Chronicles are recorded in the in the Chronicles of the Medes and the Persian. They believe there's actually more. There was more to the book about Mordecai and his reigning over the people, but this is what we have here this morning. And we just see the difference between this leader, Mordecai, and the leader, Haman. We see that Mordecai is right there, second in command, right beside the king. He was liked by his own people and did not despise anybody. He was universally accepted and gained the good word of all his brethren. He was seeking the wealth of the people and speaking peace to all his seed. Again, just a totally different picture. And my challenge for each of us here this morning is that we can learn some things from the character of Esther, the character of Haman, and the character of Mordecai. One is that Esther's beauty was more than something on the surface. And secondly, that God had brought Esther to the kingdom for such a time as this. The third thing I want us to remember is that Haman's pride was his downfall. And fourthly, is that Mordecai's quiet ways brought him favor of men and also brought him power. It's always a story that impressed me. In closing, in Psalms 37, verses 12 and 13, the wicked plotteth against the just, and gnasheth upon him with his teeth. The Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth his day is coming. Again, it shows that the Lord orchestrates, the Lord knows that the wicked will perish, and the just will live on. And as we think about it's what's inside that counts, we see that on Mordecai, we see that on Esther, we see that on Haman. There's a saying that I came across: people are like stained glass windows. They sparkle and shine when the sun is out, but when the darkness sets in, their true beauty is revealed only if there is a light from within. Let's kneel together to pray.